Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's Freddie Prinz Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Jonas Knox. Winter is coming. Heavy rain, sleet, snow, and ice. Are your tires up for the challenge? Tread confidently in winter's worst with a set of new tires from Tire Rack. They sell only the best, like the full line of Pirelli tires. Go to TireRack.com/sports. Tell them what you drive. Your tires will ship fast and free to you or one of over 10,000 recommended installers. TireRack.com, the way tire buying should be.
This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
We're going to be joined by my guy Lance Taylor, 94.5 Jocks down in Birmingham, to talk everything that happened over the weekend in the NBA and maybe a little bit of the NHL. But first, let me go ahead and bring in my guy Eddie Garcia, find out what's shaking in the world of sports.
Well, Clay, in the NBA playoffs, we had the 1-8 matchup in the West, and the Rockets hold off the Timberwolves for a 104-101 victory. James Harden, 44 points in the win for Houston. Pacers go into Cleveland, easily beat the Cavaliers 98-80. That's Cleveland's first opening round loss in 8 years. Victor Oladipo, 32 points for Indiana. The Thunder down the Jazz 116-108. Paul George, 36 points. Russell Westbrook, 29 points in the win for Oklahoma City. Overtime for the Celtics to beat the Bucks 113-107. In the NHL playoffs, the Golden Knights, the expansion Golden Knights, beat the Kings 3-2. Vegas now with a 3-0 series lead. Blue Jackets over the Capitals 5-4 in overtime. Columbus has a 2-0 series lead, winning both the first two games on the road. Wild beat the Jets 6-2. Winnipeg still has a 2-1 series lead, and the Penguins down the Flyers 5-1. Pittsburgh grabs a 2-1 series advantage. And also, Clay, a couple notes from baseball. The Red Sox make it 13-2 on the season with a 3-1 win over the Orioles. That's their best start in the 118-year history of the franchise. And the Mets are 12-2, best start in team history, as they beat the Brewers 3-2 on a walk-off home run.
Good stuff. Let's roll with Lance Taylor at the Lance Taylor on Twitter. LT, we got LeBron James losing his first opener of a series in the, what is he, 12-0 in the first round openers so far in the in his career. He's never lost a first round series since he got into the league at 18. How much of a nervousness slash alarm button should this be for the Cleveland Cavaliers and their fans?
Well, I think it should be a, you know, they should be on high alert just for a couple of reasons, Clay. I mean, they're a four seed, so it's not like they've had a great regular season. And then you throw in the fact that they don't have a Kyrie Irving. You're starting guys like, you know, Jordan Clarkson, his first career playoff start. Rodney Hood, who's got no playoff experience. You know, outside of a Kevin Love, you really don't have another go-to guy. And I thought one of the more amazing numbers, not only the thing that you just brought up, but on the broadcast yesterday, they've won 21, or they had won 21 consecutive first-round games. Going back to 2012, LeBron teams, 21 consecutive first-round games that they had won. So now he's in an 0-1 hole against an Indiana team that Nate McMillan's really had playing out of their mind the last month. And Victor Oladipo's a guy that can take a game over. He played better than LeBron in the clutch yesterday. So I think, you know, even if Cleveland gets past Indiana, Clay, and this looks to have the makings of at least a 6 or 7 game series, you know, then you go on and you're playing a Toronto team that is much improved. And if you get by Toronto, if Embiid comes back from Philadelphia, I just don't know if Cleveland's got enough to get to the NBA Finals.
We're the last time LeBron lost a first-round playoff game was May 6th, 2012. Is this right? Game four with the Heat against the Knicks. That's pretty crazy to kind of put into context how long it has been since he actually lost one of these games. Okay, what about the rest of the NBA? Did any of the other first-round games really surprise you? Eight different series off and running. Any other kind of apprehensive, excited, anything about these teams that are playing so far that stood out to you?
Well, you know, a couple of things. Golden State looks motivated again. Look, and they're playing a shorthanded Spurs team that probably overachieved without Kawhi this year or for the majority of the year. So I think Golden State's going to do what Golden State we expect them to do. On the other hand, you know, Houston being the best regular season team, I mean, they struggled in spots last night. James Harden was awesome with his 44, but everybody else, especially behind the perimeter where Houston's been so good this year, they really struggle. And Minnesota with Karl Anthony Towns only going for eight, kind of a subpar game for him. You know, they almost sneak out a game one win. And if, you know, if that thing would have flipped, if Minnesota wins that game, who knows? And your best game of the weekend was probably Boston surviving Milwaukee. I still think Boston is going to have trouble putting them away. And, you know, Boston obviously shorthanded right now. But all in all, I think it was a pretty exciting first weekend of the NBA playoff. It just sucks that we've got so much intrigue with this Cleveland-Indiana matchup, and we don't get to see game two until Wednesday.
I know. And they want to set up Friday-Sunday because, one, you know, that's when the ratings are going to go roll in, right? They want LeBron on Sunday when everybody's home. I think that's a Sunday night game on TNT, but they're setting it up so they've got the Friday-Sunday kind of doubleheader there. But waiting till Wednesday is pretty ridiculous. I wish they were playing this game on Tuesday, and then they could have a couple of extra days to travel, even though the distance between Cleveland and Indiana isn't exactly very substantial. But I agree with you that it definitely feels like you're dragging it out. And frankly, I mean, who knows what will happen over the next couple of days in terms of the storyline surrounding that one. You mentioned the Raptors. My contention had been coming into the NBA playoffs. The Raptors had lost whatever the heck it was, so many different series in a row, game ones. I think it was like 10 or 11 in a row that they had lost game ones. My argument was if the Toronto Raptors were in New York City, if you switched jerseys and the Knicks were in the Toronto Raptors jerseys and vice versa, that there would be infinitely more attention surrounding the Knicks than there is the Raptors. That basically nobody respects the Raptors because they're from Canada. Fair or foul discussion and accusation.
I think it's kind of dead on. I don't think we've ever given this organization much respect at all. And you look at the backcourt. I mean, it's one of the best backcourts in the NBA. I mean, Kyle Lowry was playing with flu-like symptoms this past weekend and not close to 100%. But DeMar DeRozan, if he played in New York and they had the identical record, if they were able to win 60 games in New York, DeMar DeRozan would squarely be a guy that people talk about as a top 10 guy. But because they play in Toronto, I just kind of think it's a forgotten franchise. So I think you're dead on with that.
Yeah, and I also, people say, oh, well, DeRozan's not a star because, you know, it's just because he's not even necessarily that he's in Toronto, but like the Greek Freak is a pretty big star and he plays in Milwaukee, right? I mean, so if you're an American player, even if you're born overseas, people will find you. I feel like the Raptors are the most overlooked team, despite the fact that they're the best team in the Eastern Conference this year. And maybe the argument can be, well, it's because they haven't had postseason success, and that's the reason why nobody respects them. But I think a lot of it, frankly, is just Canada. And I think television here, it does not want to put on the Raptors because they don't get the television ratings. I think that's a huge part of it. Because if you are TNT or you are ESPN or your ABC or any of these other networks, they know if they put the Raptors on that Toronto may be a big market, but the Canadian teams are going to get the benefit of those ratings, not the American sports fans. So they don't bring in a couple of extra million people that they'll get if they put on an American team that has a following where they know they get the ratings points. I don't think it's a conspiracy. I think it's just flat out business. And I think that hurts the Raptors in terms of their attention.
I mean, when's the last time a Canadian team really was impactful? You know, Edmonton, the Oilers dominated in the 80s. The Blue Jays were really good in the early 90s. I know Vancouver played in the Stanley Cup Finals in 94. Calgary was there, but we just hadn't had an impactful franchise from Canada in a long time.
Well, I mean, they certainly haven't won the Stanley Cup since 93 in Canada, which is a pretty unbelievable long string of futility. And doesn't look like, by the way, with the Maple Leafs, we'll see what happens. Minnesota gets a really big win in Game 3 in that series over Edmonton. We'll see who exactly, if anybody in Canada, is going to make a run this year. But I think you're right. I mean, I think the Raptors are the best chance for a team to advance to the finals in a long time. Vancouver went out there to the finals. Who did Vancouver lose to when they had the riots and everything else surrounding Vancouver? Was that the Kings they lost to? Was that the Western Conference Finals when all that happened?
Yeah,
I can't remember exactly.
Yeah, I think it was the Western Conference Finals.
So it's been a long time since a team from Canada really had a run. I think there's a lot of truth to that. Okay, sticking in, and I know you're not a hardcore NHL fan, but the Caps. The Caps have the best record in hockey the previous two seasons. This year they go up against the Blue Jackets, who I don't think the Blue Jackets had ever played in the playoffs. So this was their first two postseason games ever. I think that's correct. They go on the road, the Blue Jackets do, and win over the Caps two in a row in Washington, D.C. Are the Caps right up there? I know the city of Washington in general, since we've had this discussion before, since I think it was 93 when the Redskins won the Super Bowl. I think the Caps and the city of Washington, D.C. in general are the saddest American sports town over the last, like, 25 years. But losing two in a row to the Blue Jackets is pretty crushing when you've got somebody as good as Ovechkin, right?
Yeah, Ovechkin's a guy that's, I mean, you know, we talk about guys like Dan Marino. And look, at least Dan Marino made a Super Bowl. But great players in their sport that just have this void and really don't have anything to show for having that great career. And when you look at Ovechkin and the Caps, I mean, just a team that has never done anything. And I agree with you. You know, we're talking about Canada as a country. When you look at D.C., their sports properties, I mean, as good as the Nationals have been over the last 5 years, they've never won a playoff series. The Redskins have been god-awful under Daniel Snyder. The Wizards, they seem to be regressing. You know, we mentioned great backcourts. When you look at Beal and you look at Wall, I mean, that team's an 8 seed now. So, I think it starts with Ovechkin, though, and the Caps, because they seem to have the most promise along with the Nationals in that city, but it's just a jinx city right now.
You're down in Birmingham, Alabama, SEC and college football spring games happening across the country. But the biggest story so far, I think, coming out of Alabama is that Tua is injured. Tua Tagovailoa, the star quarterback for Alabama who came in and won the national title against Georgia. What's the story there? Is there any reason to be apprehensive or nervous if you are if you're an Alabama Crimson Tide fan about Tua's hand?
No, you know, they've got their A-Day scrimmage coming up this weekend. And, you know, he fractured the finger a couple of weeks ago, and he's been able to practice on a limited basis and just re-aggravated it on Friday. So they're probably going to hold him out. But I just don't think it's much concern at all. Look, and this is a quarterback battle based on the fact that Jalen Hurts is 25-2 as a starting quarterback who's played for two national championships and won one, although he was benched at halftime for Tagovailoa. This is going to be one of these major storylines in college football going all the way until August. And we won't know who the starting quarterback is until the Louisville game, until September. My bet is Tagovailoa's talent will win out, but I think there'll be a spot for Jalen Hurts. You've got a new offensive coordinator in Mike Locksley, and I just think Jalen Hurts is such an athletic guy, and he's a natural-born leader. They'll find a spot for him on the field, but I think ultimately Tagovailoa will start. But as far as the finger injury, I don't think it's much concern right now.
Other big news that happened on Friday, and it kind of got snowed under, I think, because there's so much of the NBA and NHL playoff games going on. Dez Bryant gets released. If that happens in, like, the middle of March, it's a huge story. Happening on Friday, I thought it was smart. I believe the way the Cowboys got it out, it's obviously a huge story in the Dallas area and a big story for NFL fans in general. But I think it pales in comparison to the start of the NBA and NHL playoffs. Having said that, how much value does Dez Bryant still have to you? How much of an impact will this have on Dak Prescott, the Cowboys in general? Do you think there'll be a lot of teams out there trying to sign Dez?
You know, I don't know, Clay. It's really interesting that Jerry Jones, you know, meets with him for 20 minutes. And this is the guy that is the all-time Cowboy leader in touchdown receptions. And look, the production has dropped off. There's no doubt. I mean, he didn't go for over 100 yards in any game this season for the first time in his career, I think. But he was only going to make, I think, $8.5 million. And for Jerry Jones not to sit down and say, hey, look, let's come up with a number, let's give you a pay cut, but let's keep you on the roster, was really surprising. But to me, Dez Bryant obviously doesn't have separation anymore. The 50-50 balls, he doesn't dominate like he used to on those. And to me, he's more like a two now. So I think there's going to be some value out there for a Dez Bryant, but I don't think teams are going to pay him to be a number one.
Yeah, it is intriguing. And on the way out, we haven't talked much about this, but there's a as we talk about spring football and everything else, Shea Patterson, do you think he will be the starting quarterback for Michigan this fall?
I do. I don't understand why the NCAA seems to be dragging their feet on this. Of course, we've seen that in a lot of different areas in the past. But I've just got a feeling, you know, there's been correspondence back and forth, and I think Michigan really felt good about the situation a couple of weeks ago. I know Ole Miss is not going to do a 180 on their stance, but I've just got this feeling that Shea Patterson is going to be the quarterback. It's funny, when you look at the Big Ten East right now, the best division in college football, nobody's talking about Michigan. And I'm not a Jim Harbaugh fan by any means, but I could just see this be the year, as bad as they were last year, at least under circumstances, if Shea Patterson is eligible and starts for them, I could see them be one of the stories of college football this year.
You think Shea Patterson's a first-round guy?
No, I don't.
I think high-end, he could be Baker Mayfield-esque. He's a little bit undersized. He's got a big arm. He's got a lot of excitement surrounding him. Coming off the knee injury, I just feel a little bit like it may be aggressive to expect him to step in and be as good as people are hoping that he's going to be. So I think that's going to be a storyline to follow for sure. Have a good week, my man. Appreciate you waking up early with us.
Okay, see you, Clint.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
It'll obviously be a lot of where's LeBron going to go. That drama gets ratcheted up a great deal if they suddenly get eliminated early. If the Cavs get eliminated early, that would really kind of ratchet that drama up to a different level. And here's the other thing. When you look at the Cavs in general, remember the last time LeBron left the Cavs, he quit on this team. He quit on the team. I believe they were playing the Celtics right before he left and went to Miami. He walked into the locker room, headed into the locker room in that tunnel. He ripped off his Cavs jersey. You remember that? The cameras caught him ripping off the Cavs jersey. He left the court with 8 seconds left. Left the court with 8 seconds left against the Pacers. LeBron always, whenever he loses, and especially when he loses unexpectedly, early, he makes it about other people, not himself. I'm just saying, if you're paying attention to this story, it's worth contemplating and following where in the world LeBron James is going to go. We've got Brandon Wright with us now. He's been playing in the league for a long time. He's out with an injury. He was on the Memphis Grizzlies, then he joined the Houston Texans, was not able to get healthy, is now out. He's watching the NBA. Sorry, he was on, I always say the Houston Texans, the Houston Rockets. I always cross up their names. He's on the Rockets, the team that plays basketball in Houston. And now he is watching the NBA playoffs just like all of us. Brandon, what did you see in the opening 8 series? What jumped out to you the most as a guy who's been playing in the league for a while?
Man, the biggest thing I seen yesterday was the Cleveland-Indiana series. I couldn't believe Cleveland came out like that, you know, especially in the first quarter. You know, a lot of people already doubted them anyway, but, you know, I think that thing is going 7. I think Cleveland will have a great effort tomorrow night, but it's going to be a long series, and, you know, LeBron's going to have to do a lot to carry this team to the finals if they're going to get back.
When you saw that game watching it as an NBA guy, I'm watching it as a casual basketball fan, and every game is different, so it's hard to draw a ton of conclusions, but you just said you think it's going to go 7. So you don't think there's that much difference between these two teams. Regardless, if LeBron gets past this game, how good are the Raptors? How good are the 76ers? How much better is the top line maybe of the Eastern Conference, not even considering Kyrie being injured and Gordon Hayward being injured for the Celtics? How much better overall is the talent in the Eastern Conference this year than maybe what we've seen in past years?
Oh, it's definitely a step up. I think the young guys that have been in that conference for a long time are finally at the level where they now can produce at a high stage. I mean, like you said, 1 through 8, you know, none of those seeds really have a lot of separation. You know, you see Milwaukee yesterday, you know, had a chance to win the game. You know, you see all these lower seeds. You see Indiana get the win. I mean, Philadelphia pretty much smothered Miami, but Miami will have a better effort tonight. It's going to be close, man. I mean, I don't even know who's going to come out of that conference. It's so tough right now.
How good is Ben Simmons when you watch his game?
Oh, man, he's so talented. You know, he can do everything, handle the ball, post up. You know, he can get to the lane. You know, the only thing people say he can't do is shoot. He doesn't shoot any jumpers at all. I think when he adds that, he'd be probably the best player in the NBA. But he's just so talented to be that young and be that good already. I mean, that team is going to be really, really good for a long time.
I've got it. We're talking to Brandon Wright. He's been in the NBA for years. He's out injured now. Brandon, when this is an amazing stat that I saw that I couldn't believe. Since Ben Simmons left high school, do you know how many three-pointers he has attempted in his college, is obviously at LSU for 1 year, and his pro career? How many three-pointers has he attempted?
I would say under 10.
That's a good guess. Three. He was one for three. He was 1 for 3 in college at LSU for an entire season. He has made one three-pointer since he left high school. How do you become a good shooter? Like, I mean, you see a lot of guys come into the NBA, and I can think back to, I'll use you as an example. Jason Kidd used to not be able to hit the broadside of a building, to use an old school guy. When Jason Kidd came into the NBA, he was almost entirely a point guard. He never had a set shot. By the time he finished his career, he had developed into a really good outside shooter. What do you have to do to become a good shooter if you came into the NBA not a great shooter? You've probably seen guys over the years work on it. What makes it happen? Is it just getting the reps? Is it form? What can you do in the NBA that allows you to become a decent shooter with time?
I mean, I'm glad you asked that question because, you know, a lot of guys get these shooting coaches, they get these workout gurus, and they get these guys trying to tweak their shot. The biggest thing is confidence. You know, you got to keep shooting the ball. You got to keep seeing the ball go through the hole. You know, like you said, Jason Kidd wasn't a great shooter when Kurtz came in, but he continues to shoot the ball. You look at a guy like, even like DeAndre Jordan, who can't shoot free throws in a game, but, you know, I've seen that guy hit 50 free throws in a row in practice. It's all about confidence. You know, you got to see the ball go in during the game, and that'll allow you to make shots when it really counts.
What about, okay, you were on the Rockets. First of all, how healthy are you? What are you doing now to rehab, and what's your day-to-day existence like now?
That's why I'm up so early. I'm heading to the gym pretty soon to go work out, and then I'm going to physical therapy right after that. Just had a knee clean up 3 weeks ago. You know, pretty simple, pretty standard. Just, you know, something I had to do to get ready for next year. And, you know, feeling pretty good already walking around and stuff like that. But everything's going well. Just a procedure that had to be done.
Now, before I get into asking you about the Rockets and what you think of that team, I want to ask you this too. You live in Nashville. You're a Nashville Predators fan. What's your policy? Like, tonight the game is not going to start till 9. You said you're up early going to get rehab. You're working on your knee. You're an early riser like a lot of the people who are listening to this show are right now. What do you do on late-night sports? Do you take a nap? Do you stay up for it? Like, what will you do tonight? And you can say it also for the NBA because I'm sure you're watching the playoff games too. How do you handle these West Coast games when they start so late?
Yeah, I'll be all over the place tonight. I'll be watching the press. I'll be watching all these other games. You know, I pretty much still stay up. You know, I've been in the NBA for 11 years, so I'm used to these late nights, early mornings. So I'll be up pretty late. I'll probably watch the whole Preds-Avs game. I'll even watch the other two NBA games that are on tonight. But I'll just man it out tomorrow. You know, I might only get 4 hours of sleep. It might be a long day on Tuesday, but I'll definitely still stay up and watch.
We're talking to Brandon Wright. All right, what can you tell me? Did you stay up and watch the Rockets last night? And what did you think about their opening game against the Timberwolves?
No, it was a little bit tougher than I initially thought. I thought it was going to be a much higher scoring game. You know, some of the guys on the Timberwolves didn't particularly shoot well. But, you know, James Harden pulled the team through. You know, he's been playing like that all season. And I don't expect it to be a long series. I expect it to be a shootout for sure. You know, Minnesota gets one game, I think they'll be in good shape. But I don't think it'll be a close one at all.
We're talking to Brandon Wright. What is the difference in the intensity level from regular season NBA to playoff NBA?
I think the biggest thing is every possession counts. You don't want to just throw a possession away. You know, that could be the difference in the game. And, you know, look at the Minnesota-Houston game last night. You know, there were chances to be had, and just, you know, Minnesota couldn't come up with the plays. And, you know, each possession counts. You know, every play is critical, and you want to limit those mistakes. You know, the games are long, man. Those TV timeouts make the game more intense, you know, make the game a lot longer than what it should be. But, you know, you just got to take it one possession at a time.
When you look at the Warriors, we're talking to Brandon Wright, a longtime NBA veteran. When you look at the Warriors, it looks like they just flipped a switch against the Spurs. And obviously the Spurs still don't have Kawhi Leonard. We don't know exactly what's going on there. You're a guy who's out with an injury now. Have you ever been in a situation like that with a team where it seems like a lot of guys feel like Kawhi Leonard should be playing, he's not playing? How does that internal dynamic play out? And also, as part of that series, it seems like the Warriors now, having played so many postseason games and feeling so good, even without Steph, they literally seem like they flipped a switch and just dominated. Is that an accurate reflection? Do you expect them to be a different team in the postseason than they were down the stretch in the regular season?
Oh, no question. I mean, they have championship pedigree. You know, they have plenty of guys who've been there before. You know, to be honest, I mean, you know, people don't like to, you know, say this. You know, you won't hear a coach or a general manager say it. You probably won't even hear many players say it. But they probably got a little bored, you know, towards the end of the season. You know, they knew where they were going to be. You know, they got to the point where they knew the Rockets were going to finish first in the West, and it was about 15, 16 games left. And then, you know, they just say, you know, let's get to the playoffs. You know, this is what we play for. You know, we're not worried about these last games in the regular season. But, you know, they definitely have a tremendous advantage over the Spurs. You know, Spurs really don't have enough, I don't think, have enough firepower to keep up. And, you know, them being without Kawhi, that's tough. You know, I've been on both sides of that thing. I mean, you know, something is going on that we haven't heard about yet. And whether he's there next year or he's traded or he signs a big-time extension, you know, we'll eventually find out what's going on. But, I mean, obviously he's not comfortable with the way he's feeling, so he's not going to step on the court.
And that kind of puts the whole team as well as Greg Popovich in an awkward position. Popovich said something about how you'll have to ask his group, meaning I think in general, you know, it's his advisors and everybody else that's surrounding him. This has really gone south in a hurry, right? Because it seemed like Kawhi's media reputation, at least, I don't know if you guys talk differently in the league, you never know whether somebody's accurately reflected or not, but it was like, oh, Kawhi's the perfect Spur. You know, he's not a guy who's trying to draw a lot of attention. A lot of people tried to compare him to Tim Duncan, who obviously is the ideal player to have been with Popovich for as long as he was, Manu Ginobili, Tony Parker, guys who kind of bought into the Popovich system. This has to be something that NBA players are talking about too, just as much as NBA fans are, right?
Yeah, we really want to know what's going on, and they're being really, really tight-lipped about the whole situation. And obviously the Spurs organization is pretty fed up with, you know, the way Kawhi's handled this and, you know, him not coming back, because they continue to say that he's cleared by their doctors to play. But he's not playing because his doctors are telling him not to play. So something is going on. Maybe he's not feeling like he should. You know, maybe he's less than 100%. He doesn't want to go out there until he's completely 100%. You know, the story is going to keep on telling itself all the way through the offseason, but the Spurs are upset and the players are starting to get a little frustrated, and I think they're past the point where they're going to, you know, count on him to come back.
If you were predicting right now, so I tell you right now, we've now seen the opening games of the NBA playoffs. So you've gotten to see all 16 teams come out, see the first round games. If you were predicting right now who's going to meet in the NBA finals, who would you take?
Oh, that's a tough one, man. How about this, man? How about you this? The winner of the Houston Golden State series is probably going to win the finals going away.
You think the West is that much better than the East?
I just think the way it's going to shape up in the East is going to be just, you know, it's going to be a battle all the way to who can get to the conference finals. And it's going to be so tough. You know, I don't see many sweeps happening in the East in the first round. I think it's going to be, you know, very competitive five, six, seven game series all the way through. And, you know, by the time that team gets to the finals, I think they're going to have to just breathe. And then it's going to be another team that's so much better, so much talented than them in the finals, and it's going to be tough on them.
We're talking to Brandon Wright. Last question for you, because I know you got to get to rehab and continue to get better, be back for next season. When I've been making the argument on the show that if the Toronto Raptors' exact same team was in New York City, in other words, we just took DeMar DeRozan, we took Lowry, everybody else, we just pick them up from Toronto and put them in New York City, like a Freaky Friday kind of situation. And you, well, not that way, because you're playing in different bodies, but you just take that whole team and put it in New York City, and then you take the Knicks and you put them in Toronto, that everybody would be talking about this Raptors team. But that because they're in Canada, the American sports media and fans don't give them as much respect based on that fact. You buying or selling that idea?
Oh, I'm buying it 100%. They will be bigger than the Warriors. They will be bigger than the Rockets. They'll be a huge story. And they'll be right up there with LeBron James and where he's going to go and all that type of things. That will be the story of the league. Because, I mean, you know how it is in New York. They're thriving for a team to be great.
Yeah.
Now, you're 100% correct. I agree with you. I think they're undersold. That's a great team. And they definitely have an opportunity to take that thing all the way.
Do NBA players buy into Toronto almost more than the media does? Because I think a lot of people out there listening to us right now are like, oh, it's the Raptors. They're gonna fade. They're no good. You guys have played against them. You know how hard it is to win 59 or 60 games in this league, no matter who you are. Do you guys believe in them maybe more than the general fan and general media does?
That's a great team. I mean, they're solid 1 through 10. They have guys that start – veteran guys who play for a long time, put up big scoring numbers, and they bring those young guys in off the bench, and they keep the pace up very, very, very high. And, I mean, I don't know if you've seen the stats on them, but that's how they've won a lot of games this year. Their bench is tremendous. Those guys have been playing really, really well. That's the reason why they won almost 60 games this year, is because mostly because of the bench coming in and either playing even with the guys they're playing against or outplaying the guys by a big margin. So, They're gonna be good. They're gonna be fine. I don't think Washington can really keep up with them. I think Washington can get a couple games, but I think Toronto they'll take that series pretty easily.
We're talking to Brandon Wright. I know I said last question, but what's your prediction for the Preds tonight against the Avs?
I think it's gonna be a tough game. I think we dropped this one actually. The Avs have been playing pretty good. You know, they've given us all they got. I think we lose this one in a close one, but we do win Game 4 and come back home and close it out.
Do you have a bank? You said you're going to be watching all the NBA games too. Do you have a bank of multiple televisions, or are you working the remote aggressively down the stretch here? How do you watch your games when you're sitting at home?
No, I got different. I got the iPad going. I got the laptop going. I got the TV going. I got everything going on. So it's pretty crazy, man. I'm just trying to keep up with everything going on in the sports world right now. It's always a great time of year with the hockey playoffs and the NBA playoffs, especially in the first round.
All right, my man, get well, get some sleep when you can, and we'll talk to you probably next week.
All right, man, appreciate you having me.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
She is, in fact, with us at Britt McHenry on Twitter. Britt, are you hungover after drinking your sorrows away over the Cavs performance?
A little bit. I woke up. My alarm went off this time. I was a good, I'd want to say employee, but obviously I just come on your show occasionally. Jason and I are killing it between snowstorms, not
yes.
coming into work, and then me sleeping in. So my alarm went off, and I woke up for a couple seconds. I had no idea why I did. And then I was delighted to know I'd be talking to you today, but just I'm so sad.
So wait, let me ask you this. So last night I see you tweet out a picture of yourself in a Caps mm-hmm. shirt. And then did you delete that? What happened? I didn't see it on your feed this morning when I was going to retweet that you were coming on.
I was so mad. I was so mad. I want to compare myself to the guy. Remember that video that went viral about, and he's in Cleveland and he's like pointing to the Brown Stadium a couple years ago. And he's like shouting that it's a factory of sadness. That is how I felt last night at the now Capital One Arena. It will always be the Verizon Center to me. But I just immediately – I saw the goal coming 30 seconds before it happened. And to be honest with you, Clay, in between, like, going to run and get drinks, I was happy as can be. I thought they were up two goals. They let Columbus stick around. I don't know why – well, I do know why Braden Holtby wasn't starting – in the net because he had a bad stretch of, you know, the end of the season. But he didn't even do that well. I mean, I just don't understand how this team is always one of the best hockey teams on paper, Clay, and they can't get out of their own way.
We were just talking about this with Ovechkin. Can you think of another athlete? You covered the NFL for a long time. Like, who would the NFL version of Alexander Ovechkin be? I mean, because obviously some people would say it was Romo, but he retired, so he's not in the league anymore. Is there even a player in the NFL that you could point to and say, this guy is one of the best, if not the best, maybe in the league that hasn't won? I mean, I can't even think of who it would be that you would point to as the Ovechkin of the NFL, for instance.
Tony Romo was a good one, but like you said, he retired. We'll see where Dez Bryant lands. He could be a bit underachieving in terms of what everybody thought.
Would you sign Dez? Like you, do you think Dez has anything left?
I do. I think he has a Redskin signing written all over him. Like,
That's like the Dan Snyder way, overpay, bring in a guy who's a big name, and then he just disappoints everybody in D.C.?
Absolutely. Like, you know, Alex Smith can't throw it more than 15 yards, never gets to him. Like, that's just typical of what I would expect of them, especially if Dez wants to stay in the NFC East. Sorry, Redskins fans. Covered the team for a long time. But I can't really think about it. I mean, Alex Ovechkin will go down as one of the greats, if not the greatest, in terms of just pure raw talent. He's gotten older. I know some of the guys have complained about his lack of defense, but he scored last night and just still, like, TJ Oshie got a goal. Nicholas Backstrom is underrated. I've always said Nicholas Backstrom, I played soccer growing up. If people listening don't know that, I was really into it. And he reminds me of Michelle Akers, like, if you go way back into the 90s, of how good he is. But Mia Hamm would always get the attention. That's sort of like Alex Ovechkin and Nicholas Backstrom. And he played well, and he just can't get it done.
Now, you also, you're in the D.C. area, and you've adopted mm-hmm. those teams. You went to the Nats. I know the playoff games for the Nats, and the Nats consistently crush people. The Wizards seem like they were trending in the right way with Bradley Beal and with John Wall. And even last year had a lot of exciting games. I think they lost to the Celtics in 7 or whatever the heck it was. I can't remember exactly. But they seemed like they were going in the right direction. Now they've regressed. It doesn't seem necessarily like they're going to have much of a shot to win a series. Why is there so much sadness in the Washington, D.C. area? And obviously including everything since the Redskins won the title in 93, the last 25 years of life in the nation's capital has been pretty brutal if you're a sports fan rooting for teams there.
It has. Now with Cleveland having won in basketball, I think that D.C. and Minnesota have the longest playoff droughts since, what, 91?
Yeah, look, I think there's no doubt. Like, if you were ranked, and maybe Buffalo, but Buffalo only has 2 games. Like, I look at the NHL ratings for who mm-hmm. watches, and I just feel so sad for people in Buffalo because they're the number one market. And they obviously the Bills are, you know, at least they got into the playoffs, but that was an ugly game against the Jags. But the Sabres are never that good. But I think if you were ranking the 3 areas right now, I think mm-hmm. number 1 for futility over the last quarter century is Washington. I think number 2 is the Minnesota, Minneapolis, St. Paul region. And I think number 3 is probably Buffalo. Atlanta is close to up there too, because I think they won the World Series in 95, if I'm not mistaken, but they haven't won it mm-hmm. since. So Atlanta, and you look at how close they've been several different times, I think would probably be in the 4 spot. But yeah, I mean, like, D.C. to me is number
least,
1 overall.
At least the Falcons went to the Super Bowl. At least
and should have won it, yes.
Yeah, at least there was something to look forward to. When I was hired by ESPN, again, there's always this misconception I was working in Bristol. I never was. I would go there sporadically, but I was based in D.C. because they said, oh, the Nationals are getting good. There's Bryce Harper and Steven Strasburg. There's the Wizards with John Wall. You know, they're up and coming. And then there's the Capitals. And of course, the Redskins are just always going to be popular no matter how bad their record is. And look at all those teams. I mean, to your point, Clay, it's bad. And they do it in such heartbreaking ways. Like for the Nationals in Game 5, they've had, what, Max Scherzer has won 2 Cy Youngs with them, and the pitching was phenomenal in the playoffs last year, but they couldn't hit. And so I remember coming back from that game. That's when I learned, Clay, to never go to a playoff game, which I did last night, but I stopped at a certain point and just – don't tweet. Don't have the beers and Twitter.
Yeah,
and
you know what? I make that decision all the time. If I'm going to have 2 beers or more or 2 drinks or more, I don't get on social media. Because, like, on Friday night, I went out drinking and to dinner with several friends. And, you know, like, it's funny, when we left, we were with 4 couples. And all 4 women were driving. So that kind of puts into perspective, like, how much the men were drinking at the dinner. Like, we all drove there, and all 4 of our wives drove us home. But after two drinks, I won't tweet anything. And it's just because I don't know exactly. Your inhibitions are down. You don't know how you're going to respond to people, things like that. So, that's my rule. And I don't think I've ever broken it, because otherwise, you go back and you look at your timeline. I mean, just look at your text after you have five or six drinks and you wake up the next day and you're like, oh, I don't, that was probably not the right text to send, right? Especially if you're single, God forbid. I don't think there's any doubt at all about that. How do you balance it out? Because you cover the – I feel like a lot of times people like you who've had to cover the NFL and be quote-unquote objective for a long time, it's fun to just be able to go all in with a team, even if they're breaking your heart like the Caps and the Nats have, and root for them. How do you balance that out? When people see you out, are they like, oh, Britt, why are you in a Capitals jersey, or why are you dressed up for Nats gear? Or do people just kind of assume that you're able to root for teams? Do you get questions about it?
I don't, just because I have been in Washington, D.C. for so long. I mean, almost 10 years now. I it was unique in that as soon as I graduated, I came to Washington and worked my way up here. So there's so many people in this city that recognize me from being on local TV, have seen me at all these games. So I don't really have that. This is the first year, though, thanks to ESPN, that I get to just be the fan. I'm not covering the NFL draft this year, which is amazing. I don't want to be stuck in a room for 3 days, obsessing over picks that they won't end up picking. So I get to watch this stuff just objectively as a fan, but I've always been a fan of the Capitals, and I became a fan because growing up in Florida, yes, Tampa Bay Lightning fans, I know you got a strong base now, but when I was growing up, I mean, it's hockey in Florida, it's just not there. So I basically really learned the sport up here, coming in right when Alex Ovechkin came to town, almost, maybe a year or two after. So I sort of learned the sport with the team. They've just always been, minus maybe 2 years in the last decade, Clay, the team that was supposed to win it all. I mean, how many times have Caps fans said this is our year? I walked away from the arena last night in the rain, Clay. It was literally raining. I purged my Twitter of all, happy pictures. I could be done. I could be done, because how do they now get out of an 0-2 hole, go to Columbus, which has a really fiery little base there, and it's the first round. Meanwhile, the Penguins are just cruising, just sweeping the Flyers. I knew this would happen, Clay. I didn't want them to play Columbus. So they're a factory of sadness.
Factory of sadness is such a great
line. I think I might
be
done. If you have a hockey team that's accepting fans, it's been a decade, I think I may be actually jumping ship now.
I would say jump ship to the Preds, but I don't want you to curse them by suddenly coming over and then they blow the lead against the Avs.
I watched Philip Forsberg. That's another botch by the Capitals. They traded him for Martin Erat and Michael Latta, who's not even in the league anymore.
And they you've got the Preds' old coach Barry Trotz, who left the Preds to go there. So the connections there are amazing. Speaking of factory of sadness, have you watched Get Up yet?
Oh, gosh, no. I could have called that a year. I think you and I on the radio might have said this a year ago, that it would be terrible.
What do you – you talk to a lot of people at ESPN. What do you think – and I do too. And, I've heard so many things about this. First of all, when you hear that those – you know what people get paid, and you know everybody who lost their jobs. When you hear Michelle Beadle, $5 million, Mike Greenberg, $6.5 million – Jalen Rose, $3 million, to get 198,000 viewers like they did on their morning show. I mean, we're kicking their ass as a radio show.
Yeah.
What do you – and we cost, by the way, a lot less than $15 million across the board in talent. I just don't even understand how these decisions can be made if it is so foreseeable that this could be a disaster.
I mean, people are going to think I'm making a joke here, but I'm or sort of some sort of snide remark. I really am not, because it's just not something to make fun of. It's reality, sadly, that the president resigned because of a Coke problem. I mean, that's all that you have to know about some of the head-scratching moves in the last year. Why do you blow up the Six and put that show on, which has since failed, and everybody saw that coming? Working there was just a sense when you would see these moves of the sports fan sitting on their couch can see these mistakes a mile away. So why are they being executed? Now, I don't always buy salaries. I know that those salaries were reported in the Hollywood Reporter. But there's a lot, as you know, Clay, a lot of people lie about their salaries in this business and inflate them. I was never one of those people just because, hey, if you can talk sports for a living or just be in television and make decent money, I think you're living a good life. But everybody says that's what those three are making, and I don't understand it because no shade, but let's face it, Michelle Beadle left to go to NBC. That was a total failure. You know, Jalen Rose, they've given him pilots on ABC that failed. And Mike Greenberg was, I think, overestimating himself a little bit too. So I don't know. I mean, I know, like, makeup artists, I know people on that show working on it, not just those three, that I hope it does better for them. But it's head scratching. I don't get it.
What about the vibe? And this is something I've talked about with several people, of feeling like not only are they getting paid insanely well to not succeed so far, but they also got to go to New York City as opposed to Bristol. You pointed out you never lived in Bristol. You were on the road covering teams and everything else. But there seems to be among ESPN people a certain, like, we're all in this together in Bristol, because it's not an ideal place to live, right? I mean, like, compared to a lot of other major media markets where people live and work, Bristol is not where you want to go. So suddenly they build this brand new studio in New York City. They send these people there. It's not just that they're getting paid a ton of money. It's that they're also living in New York City, right?
Yeah, I can just attest to the fact that I was always all across the country traveling, especially in my first year. I call it the golden year of ESPN in like 2013, 2014, where people actually still really watch the channel, with the exception of games. It was great, and I traveled everywhere, and I would hear from some of my close friends that there was resentment from different on-air people in Bristol because they'd see my pictures on Instagram or on Twitter, and they were stuck in Bristol, and there would be, you know, sort of those grumblings of, well, is she even doing her job? And yes, you know, if you're stuck out in Arizona for a week covering the draft, it's not going to distract from my work to drive an hour or two just to get lunch and sightsee while I'm taking my notes. So, but there would be anger over that. So I can only imagine if you get this brand new studio, which took forever to build, by the way, as those people were making those salaries, they lay off 250 people. They were making those salaries, Clay, doing nothing because it took, you know, much longer than expected to build that studio. So I did take it personally, to be honest with you, Clay. Like, I was one of the layoffs, and there's a lot of things behind closed doors that went into that, which I won't get into now. Maybe I'll write a book one day. But to see all my really good friends go through some bad times, and then it basically all went to fund this show that's doing terrible, it's disappointing.
Britt, it's not disappointing that you got up early with us, as disappointing as the Caps may be. We'll talk to you again soon, I'm sure. Thank you for waking up with us.
Okay, thanks.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.